Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know. This indecision's bugging me.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Roed Jarrah, who is an Iraqi-American political analyst and blogger. He first gained international prominence as the person referenced in the blog, Where is Raed? He has written From Baghdad, by the pseudonym author Salman Pax. While the U.S. invaded Iraq, Jarrah and his family compiled their own posts in the book The Iraq War Blog, an Iraqi family's inside view of the first year of the occupation. In 2003, he worked as a country director for Civic Worldwise, the only door-to-door civilian casualties survey in Iraq. He also founded MR, a non-governmental organization that carried out humanitarian and reconstruction work in Baghdad and southern Iraq. He currently lives in Washington, D.C., but has just but maintains these ties in Iraq and just traveled there a few weeks ago. Welcome to Background Briefing, Roed Jarrah.
Thank you for having me.
And clearly, there's been a political paralysis in the green zone in the government since the last election, which one group of coalition won, and yet the losing coalition ended up in control because of parliamentary maneuvers, etc. And I understand the support of Iran, and the U.S. is pulling out of a country they devastated. And the question's always been, is this government capable of governing? And it seems to sort of be almost an extension of the U.S. Green zone, illusory bubble, if you will. Is it still the case that there's the green zone and then there's the rest of Iraq?
Yes, unfortunately, this is the case. This is not surprising to many people, including myself, who said all along that a functional democracy will not be imported to Iraq by the U.S. tanks. So 8 years later, we see the real, practical reality of what happened after the U.S. invaded. There is a dysfunctional, corrupt, sectarian government that is hiding in the green zone, a government that has failed miserably in protecting Iraq's sovereignty and in providing basic services to Iraqis. So this is not, a surprising outcome, and actually, I would have been very surprised if there was a functional Iraqi government. I would be surprised if there was a government that is seen as legitimate by Iraqis, as long as the U.S. continues to occupy Iraq. I think this situation is not an exception. This is the norm of how fake governments look like, how governments that exist under foreign military occupations look like.
Well, my understanding, though, is that Roed Jarrah is that the Obama administration really does want to get the troops out. They do want to save the money. They are bogged down in Afghanistan, and as you know, we have serious problems with the budget here at home. What would keep the United States in the country?
The White House seems to be sincere about its intention to withdraw the troops. I have been following the White House statements very closely since President Obama took office, and they were all very consistent. They all promised a very clear plan to withdraw the U.S. Forces completely by the end of this year, bringing down the number of U.S. troops to zero and the number of U.S. Military bases to zero. This promise has been repeated over and over and over. At the same time, there has been pushback by the U.S. Pentagon and the national security establishment here in Washington, D.C., that does not take any of the main reasons and arguments for leaving Iraq seriously, because the way that they see it, they just want to have a permanent base there, a permanent intervention in Iraq for geopolitical reasons. They don't care about how much that's costing us and how much that will cost the future generations in the U.S. They don't care about how many people have been killed from this side. They care about some ideological and geopolitical calculations that they had all along, and they still stick to it. So unfortunately, what is happening now is that President Obama seems to be caving, as usual, when we are approaching the deadline. It seems that he is being pushed around by the old guards of the Pentagon, by the national security establishment that is not accountable, not elected in the U.S. It seems that he is being pushed around. He's not playing the leadership role that he must be playing by setting a very clear message that we are going to end this war in Iraq, not only because we don't have money to continue it, but because it has been a disaster, a moral disaster, a political disaster, a legal disaster. It has been a disaster for both Iraqis and Americans for the last 20 years since it started in 1991, and it must end as promised. Unfortunately, President Obama is not playing this role yet, and the next few months will be extremely sensitive and important to deciding the future of the bilateral relationships between the U.S. and Iraq.
Again, I'm speaking with Iraqi-American political analyst and blogger Royad Jarrah, who recently returned from Iraq. Now, if the U.S. were, if the president was able, was good to his word and was able to overcome the resistance in the Pentagon and pull all the American troops out by the end of the year as promised, what's going to happen to Iraq? Is there stability? What will fill the power vacuum?
What will fill the power vacuum is Iraq. This doesn't mean necessarily the Iraqis who are running Iraq now in the green zone. There might be another group of Iraqis or another Iraqi regime or another Iraqi establishment that will build itself without the U.S. presence. I think the U.S. withdrawal will not lead to a sudden situation where Iraq is stable overnight. There is no silver bullet that will solve the situation in Iraq. Iraq is a disaster. It has been deteriorating for the last 20 years, and I think Iraqis will need decades, not years, decades, to fix the destruction that has been subject or the destruction that happened in their infrastructure and the damage that happened to the civil society, the Iraqi demographics. The U.S. withdrawal is only the first step in that process. I think as long as the U.S. keeps a single U.S. soldier in Iraq, Iraq is not on the right path. Iraq is not even starting the process of reconciliation and reconstruction. But once the U.S. withdraws completely, brings all the soldiers and all the bases and all of the contractors and foreign mercenaries outside Iraq that will allow Iraqis to work on solving the problem. So I personally think Iraq will need at least another 10 years to reach to a point where reconstruction and reconciliation can start. Imagine how bad the situation is. Is that we need to wait until 2020, until reconstruction and reconciliation starts, not end, you know?
Right. Well, that's a really shocking statistic, Roy Gerard. Just in the last couple of minutes, though, you know, a lot of analysts say, you know, clearly the Iraqi people have lost terribly. They had a very functioning country. They had a terrible leader, but they had a functioning country. It's been destroyed. The U.S. clearly did not win this war. The Iraqi people clearly did not win anything. They've suffered a lot. Analysts say the only winners are in Iran, the extent to which the Maliki government seems connected to Iran. But I just wanted to ask you in the last minute, since there's an instability next door in Syria and the possibility of the Sunni revolutionaries taking over, and this is alarming the regime in Tehran, could there be a spillover into Anbar and reignite sectarian tensions in Iraq?
Sectarian tensions have not left Iraq. The sectarian tensions that were brought to Iraq in 2003 became, unfortunately, a part of the Iraqi system. This is how the Iraqi ruling parties see the country, and this is how the Iraqi ruling parties see the region. Actually, I would look at the entire situation the other way around. The sectarian understanding, these analysis that see the uprising in Syria through sectarian lenses, are a spillover of the Iraqi conflict. You know, the way that the U.S. introduced these divisions in Iraq, these divisions are actually spreading to the rest of the region. I personally still refuse to see the uprising in Syria as a sectarian uprising, a Sunni uprising against Shiites or against Alawis in the case of Syria. I think it is less sectarian than that. There have been many indications that it is a popular uprising against an oppressive regime. But I agree with you in the sense that all of the Iraqi ruling parties, the Sunni and Shiite and Kurdish sectarian ruling parties, see the uprising in Syria through these sectarian lenses. They understand it through sectarian terms. And that's why now the U.S. inserted and supported regime in Iraq is ironically supporting the Syrian regime. Not because it's a good regime, but because they think it's a regime that is closer to them from a sectarian point of view. I think this is extremely devastating, very sad to see how low the Iraqi political scene has reached. The Iraqi regional calculations ended up being so narrow-minded and going through these, religious and partisan calculations.
Well, I'm afraid
is the same issue.
Sure. I'm afraid we've run out of time here, Roy Gerard, but I thank you for joining us. And again, I've been speaking with Roy Gerard. An Iraqi-American political analyst and blogger who is a co-author of the Iraq War blog and Iraqi Families Inside View of the First Year of the Occupation. He currently lives in Washington, D.C., but was visiting Iraq just recently. So what did we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we began, our lead story was a story that should be the leading story in the country. It explains why we're paying so much for food and gasoline. And it's a very simple story. It's told by Michael Greenberger, the former director of the Division of Trading and Markets at the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, how Wall Street, through five commissioners, are able to literally gouge millions from the pockets of the average Americans for no purpose at all except to enrich a handful of people and impoverish most Americans, and that the price of gasoline and food are entirely distorted and completely artificial. And he makes a very, very clear case. He obviously knows, he's been there and done it, and he really lays out the landscape. And it's, frankly, I don't understand why the people in this country aren't up in arms and the pitchforks aren't descending on Wall Street, because this is a highway robbery with a license to steal. Then we talked to about the reassignment, in quotes, of the head of ATF. Well, ATF, of course, Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, Explosive Bureau, has always been undermanned, and the NRA have tried to put them out of business. They have had acting directors for many decades now, and it's all over this sting that went wrong on the Arizona border with Mexico, where 2,500 high-powered firearms, where ATF lost track of them. Well, the point is that the Congressman Darrell Issa, who's making a big fuss over this, is a complete hypocrite, because, frankly, they are doing everything, the Republicans and a lot of Democrats are doing everything they can to weaken the already weak gun controls laws in this country at the behest of the NRA. And that's the real story in this. And then finally, we spoke with Royad Jarrah, the Iraqi-American political analyst and blogger, about what's happening in his country. And it's not a pretty picture. Political paralysis, a total disconnect between the green zone and the rest of the country, and the possibility of sectarian and violence being renewed, particularly spilling over from the revolution in Syria. I'm Ian Masters. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. This program is available for podcasts, and you can sign up there at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.